30 seconds, 2 seconds. Riddell all the way outside to Watford. Three on the way. Oh! He puts it up on the left hand. No good. Tipped up. And no good again. Batted away. Tipped into Cody. Indiana's going to win it. They win it.
Yogi Ferrell. Will he take the big shot? Bryant is trying to post. It's Yogi. It's three. Got him all.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news, notes, and nods to the past. I am your host, Jared Morris. As always, Podcast on the Brink is a joint production of The Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. And if you haven't yet subscribed to The Assembly Call podcast, make sure that you do so soon so that you're ready when the season starts. Our post-game show podcasts are always ready the morning after every IU game if you don't watch us live right after the game. Subscribe on iTunes by going to assemblycall.com/iTunes or just search for Assembly Call in your podcast player of choice. And another great way, of course, to make sure that you're ready for the season is to join the Inside the Hall Premium Discussion Forum. If you like informed, passionate, and civil discussion of IU basketball, then the ITH Forum is the place for you. Join now at forum.insidethehall.com. All righty. Well, this is episode number 146 of Podcast on the Brink, and we dedicate this episode to the 146 rebounds that this IU legend corralled in his sophomore season. He is one of the most talented players in the history of Indiana basketball. No one questions that. A guy who served as a bridge between two legendary and successful eras of IU hoops while contributing to the lore of Indiana basketball himself. Who is it? Stick around to the end of the episode to find out. And on today's episode, Alex and I welcome back one of our favorite guests, John Crispin of the Big Ten Network, of course, played at Penn State as well. John was in Bloomington for Indiana's televised practice over this past weekend, and we discuss his impressions after seeing the Hoosiers up close. We also get his thoughts on how the Big Ten race will shape up this year. It's a great conversation. I think you'll really enjoy it. First, I do want to say a few quick words about our sponsor, SeatGeek. You know, buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to, and none of those other older ticket sites really seem to want to change that, but SeatGeek is different. They've come along and they've created an amazing app and website that really does make it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. And I can tell you, when myself and the Assembly Call crew, when we head up to Bloomington for the January 7th game against Illinois, we will be getting our tickets on SeatGeek. There's no question. And the reason is because they do the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. And they really do want to help you get the most bang for your buck, which is why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. And here's the best part. Listeners of Podcast on the Brink get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. And here's how you do it. Download the SeatGeek app or go to the SeatGeek website and go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Then add the promo code Brink, B-R-I-N-K. When you use that and make your first ticket purchase, SeatGeek will send you $20 after that first purchase. So again, download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code B-R-I-N-K today. Alrighty, here now is my conversation with Alex Bozich and John Crispin right now on Podcast on the Brink. Hey, quick note, there's a couple spots in the audio. John is actually driving, he's on his cell phone. There's a couple spots where it kind of cuts in and out, especially when he's talking about Juwan Morgan. It doesn't last, so you can still hear what he's saying if you listen closely, and it's good stuff. So we left it in, but don't think that the rest of it is like that. Kind of power through those few minutes, and the reception gets much better. Just wanted you to know that. Okay, enjoy the interview with John Crispin. All right, we are joined by one of our favorite guests, John Crispin of the Big Ten Network, who was in Bloomington recently. Obviously, all of us watched the televised practice, and John was there hosting that event, and so we wanted to have him on, get his perspective on the Hoosiers. John, how are you?
I'm good. I'm happy that I got a chance to spend some time in Bloomington before the season starts. That was a pretty special experience.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of talk to us about what that was like and some of your kind of major impressions from being there up close.
Well, first off, it's important to point out that, I mean, this is not something that's been done before. To really get a live look, because if you watched it, you realize that it really was unscripted and live. I mean, to the point where Coach and I would be talking and he would hop out of our conversation and and start coaching them up and then come right back to it. I mean, I felt at times that if you saw this in the broadcast, Coach is very animated. He's all over the court. He really is. He's an incredibly animated person. And so I felt at times I was like herding cats. You know what I mean? Like I'm just trying to track him down. I'm looking all over the place. I'm like, where did he go now? So it was really an interesting thing, but watching it back, it made me think about a lot of people who just have never seen that side of the program. Fans who at times have, and you know, I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just saying fans who at times in some way have kind of rooted against the program, whether it's like not happy with the coaching staff or decisions or, you know, certain players aren't making plays. When you see this side of the kids and how hard they work, how dialed in everyone in that program is, including managers. And at one point that was something I asked Coach about, was just how hard the managers work and how important that is. You see an entire organization, entire program of people who are dialed in for one common goal, and that is to get better to win basketball games. And I think for a lot of people, it shows what it really takes, and it gives you a much better perspective, more the perspective that I have for coaches and players alike.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of players, I know to me watching it, OG Anunoby was a guy who really jumped out. You know, just obviously we know about the athleticism and the size, but just kind of his assertiveness and some of the skill development on offense, he really jumped out to me. What were your impressions of seeing OG up close?
And I've said this before, I said it to actually Coach. He physically is the most impressive person I've seen in college basketball. And I would say ever. I don't think anyone has that physical skill set that he has, which means his potential as he improves his basketball skill set is limitless. And I think that's something you're seeing, that the huge strides that he takes, and I think it's something Tom Crean needs to get a little more credit for, he's teaching kids how to play basketball. And when you add the skill set coupled with the athleticism, the physicality, and then learning places on the floor, opportunities to get easy baskets and even defensive schemes, OG Anunoby could easily be a top five pick at the end of this season.
John, curious what you thought about James Blackman Jr. There's been obviously a lot of discussion about him. I saw Sports Illustrated came out this week and they projected their top 100 scorers in college basketball. I think Blackman was in the top 15. He's kind of the forgotten man, I guess maybe a little bit nationally, though, for Indiana, with all the talk about Thomas Bryant and OG Anunoby. What kind of year do you see James Blackman Jr. having?
Well, what I saw from him is much better decision-making, which means he's passing the ball a lot better. And you look at losing Yogi Ferrell, you kind of go with this point guard by committee. Well, James Blackman could be the guy at the end of games you really rely on to make a good play. And on this team, it doesn't mean he makes the play for himself. He makes the play for him or a teammate. And I see that the trust in James Blackman has gone up. And that's because he took time last year to just learn the game a little bit more. I mean, he came in as a freshman and was incredibly effective. So he really hadn't had a chance to step back. And when you are hurt and you step back and you look at the game a different way, you realize that the game's a lot simpler than we make it. And I think that's what I'm seeing from James Blackman, where the game just seems a little easier for him right now. Physically, he's there. He's in good shape. He's healthy. And you knew that the skill set was there no matter what. I mean, he's got the skills to be a big-time pro. If he can play the point guard spot and make plays off the ball screen situations that they're going to be put in, I think he's going to go draft. Because physically, he's there. He's a good 6'4", 6'5", flies around the basket, can finish at the rim, but he's shooting the ball very well too.
You mentioned the point guard by committee possibility. That's something I actually wrote about recently. Is that something you feel like can work for this team? Because, you know, last year there was so much on Yogi. You know, Yogi had the ball all the time. Everything ran through Yogi. Yogi facilitated. Yogi scored. Now there's that void. You know, what's the adjustment going to be like for the other guards kind of going to a scheme without Yogi? And can it work to do a by committee approach at point guard?
Well, it certainly can work. I actually think this team will be better suited with a point guard by committee approach. Now, the only issue is when you want to get out and run, you can't have two guys sitting there to get the ball out of bounds. You can't sit there and wait. You can't sit there and go, all right, well, you know, Josh Newkirk's on this wing and James Blackman's on this wing, and they're both sitting in the backcourt waiting for the ball. They need to get out and run. So at some point, you do have to figure out who's going to be pushing the ball. If it's an offense, if it's a rebound, guard gets a rebound, everybody takes off, because you can trust everybody, whoever gets the ball, to make good decisions. And they did that at times last year. I mean, you saw Troy Williams, and you had to live with it at times because he kicked the ball all over the place. But they really do rely on being able to push the tempo, and if you have multiple point guards, that's good. The real question for me is down the stretch, because down the stretch in a tight game situation, you do need good execution. And they do have a system. It's not as if in the end it doesn't run plays. They do have a system, but you need one guy who you can trust to put the ball in his hands and say, go make a play. And I think at some point, Tom Crean's got to figure that out. Who is it going to be? Is it going to be James Blackman? Is it going to be Josh Newkirk? Because I really like what I've seen from Josh Newkirk. Or is it going to be Robert Johnson? Rob Johnson is just as smooth as it gets. It seems like nothing seems to bother him. He'd be a great guy to have the ball in his hands at the end of game. So at some point, you've got to figure out who you're going to trust the most in late game situations. But throughout the course of the game, finding rhythm early, you know, getting that pace and tempo going, point guard by committee is going to work very well.
What were your impressions, John, of Thomas Bryant? Obviously, a lot is expected of him as a sophomore. And, you know, we saw him inside some. We saw Tom Crean even talking with him about being, you know, the trailing man and being ready for a three-pointer. What kind of sense do you get about how Indiana plans to use him and how ready he is to take the next step?
So I talked to Coach Crean after practice on Friday night. I came in town, watched practice, and what I said to him was, every seven-footer should want to come play for you. Because I've never seen a coach encourage guard skills as much as Tom Crean, and that's the development that I've seen in Thomas Bryant. It's interesting because a lot of coaches miss that. They think that big guys have to learn footwork in the post. Well, the best way for a big guy to learn footwork is to learn guard skills. And that's what you're seeing from Thomas Bryant. He's got impeccable skills around the perimeter. I saw him shoot a step back jumper from three. And it blew my mind because his footwork was perfect. So you're going to see him be much more effective in the post. I think he's in better shape, which is understandable considering the fact that he came in as a freshman. He's never really had to work in his life. And I'm not taking anything away from him, but when you get to the college level, you're now playing against other guys who can compete with you. In the high school level, it's easy. So he worked hard last year. He's got himself in much better shape. He's stronger. His footwork's better. I mean, at times last year, I think I would say that he looked like a puppy dog, kind of like a Great Dane puppy dog, where he starts running, but he can't slow down, you know, and he starts to move to the right, but he travels when he stops and picks up the ball. So you're not going to see that anymore. You're going to see that development. And I think having him play around the perimeter opens up even more driving lanes for, you know, three or four guards that can really get to the basket and finish.
And how important do you think it'll be that he's got a guy like Deron Davis now to bang against, you know, down low? And how important will having Thomas Bryant be to Deron Davis' development as a freshman?
Well, competition's the best motivator in sports. We saw that with A.J. Hammonds and Isaac Haas last year. Sorry to bring up Purdue on an Indiana show. Gosh, talk about faux pas.
We'll edit this out, don't worry.
Audience. Yeah, okay, good. But it's true. I bring them up, and I probably shouldn't have done that. Someone in your audience just yelled boiler up, so it's okay. So you do have boiler fans listening. But the point is that competition is a form of motivation in sports. You look at big guys for playing time. It's playing time, but it's also pride and ego. We think of pride and ego as negative things, and as people, too much pride and ego, yes, can be a negative thing, but those are often the things that make us good in sports. So when I was an arrogant young kid, had more ego than I could handle, I was actually a very good athlete. I was a very good basketball player. It made me fun as a human, but it made me a good basketball player because I brought a chip on my shoulder every day. I made sure I proved something every day, and I think that's what you'll see. You'll see a guy like Thomas Bryant, who last year really wasn't pushed at all. He was going to play as much as he could stay on the floor. But this year, I mean, you have a young man come in that needs the help. I mean, I'll tell you, I watched him on practice, and yes, he needs the help. He has the footwork that Thomas Bryant does. He does a great job using his body around the rim. He's not fire, but he's really going to force the issue for Thomas Bryant to improve in practice. And I think Thomas Bryant's going to help Deron on his perimeter game. So that competition, again, is the best motivator for athletes in sports, having those guys to go up against one another.
Was there anybody, John, who stood out? I mean, I suppose either positively or negatively, but of the guys that we haven't talked about, you know, especially the newcomers, or maybe a guy like Juwan Morgan, anybody whose performance really surprised you?
Nail on the head. I mean, I don't know if it surprised me, but you mentioned Juwan Morgan, and it wasn't just me. Coach Crean said it as well. He goes, people have no idea how good Juwan Morgan is. I mean, you look at his ball skills, and some of that goes back to the end of last year. James Blackman was hurt. Juwan Morgan was the backup star. He was bringing the ball up the court. As a freshman, he really developed. He gained confidence. And it's not just confidence in this type of system. It's almost like a piece. Because what Tom Crean wants you to be able to do is play free basketball. He wants you to get up and down the floor. He doesn't want you to play with fear. He wants you to shoot open shots. He wants you to try to make good plays. And if you don't make the right play, he's not going to sub you out playing. He's going to live with the mistakes. And he did go the way. I mean, going back to Maui, he lived with the mistakes. I mean, we heard, James Blackman can't cover anybody. No, Thomas Bryant really struggled to get in the right position for ball screen. And during that season, Juwan Morgan struggled at times. I mean, he was pretty steady all the way, but he didn't really handle the ball as much. This year, you're going to see him handle the ball a little bit more. So at some point, you're probably going to have to be patient with OG. But the development of Juwan Morgan last year, and then this offseason where he put on some weight, he got stronger, gained more confidence. I don't know what position he ends up playing, but he could be one of the guys that you end up saying point guard by committee. He really is that good.
John, moving to more of the Big Ten at large at this point, you know, everyone's obviously talking about, you know, the top four teams of Indiana, Purdue, Michigan State, Wisconsin, kind of put those in any order that you wish. But, you know, how do you see the top of the league? Would you agree with the top four of those teams heading into the year?
Yeah, the top four, to me, it's a no-brainer. I mean, similar to last year where you had some elite teams. I mean, you look at the Maryland, Michigan State, Indiana, Purdue. I mean, and Wisconsin slid in there, so I wouldn't consider them elite, but they slid in there as the season progressed. But there are elite teams again this year. But the middle of the pack is what would scare me. And even the bottom of the pack. I mean, usually the bottom of the pack, you know you're going to be able to get a win if you just show up and play good basketball. Not this year. I mean, you look at the bottom of the pack. I mean, a lot of people are saying, oh, Minnesota, you know, they got a big climb. Minnesota's going to be pretty good. They're going to surprise a lot of people, and so will Illinois. Illinois will surprise a ton of people because now they have depth, just like Minnesota, where Minnesota couldn't even play 5-on-5 basketball. Same with Illinois. They couldn't play 5-on-5 basketball in practice. So how do you expect a team to be any good if you can't compete against one another in practice? So the only game speed they saw was a game. And that's a tough thing to do at this level. So I think the middle of the pack this year is not just wide open, but very competitive, where those middle of the pack teams are going to beat a lot of the best teams in the country, not just the best teams in the Big Ten. But if you look at Wisconsin, I think Wisconsin's a storyline that everyone should follow because they now have to figure out how to handle and manage the expectation. And that's a huge difference. It's something that the Hoosiers have to do every single year. You have to manage expectations. And for a coach, you manage it in a variety of ways where you actually set the internal expectations for your players, and you have to live with mistakes. You even have to live with failure. As you saw last year with Indiana, you have to live with the failure and say, hey, this is a part of us getting better. We're going to get to where we need to be by the end of the season. For Wisconsin this year, the expectation externally is huge. The expectation is that they're going to win the Big Ten handedly, and they're going to go on and play for a Final Four just because they have everybody back and they had a team that had a lot of success last year. But the team last year had no expectation whatsoever. They came in with chip on the shoulder, something to prove, and they had absolutely nothing to lose. It's the ideal situation to be successful. So for Greg Gard, this is the first time he's had to coach a team where the expectation's extremely high, which means the pressure's high too.
You mentioned the middle of the pack being a lot of teams in that could finish anywhere from, you know, five to ten in the league. Is there one team you're looking at as a potential sleeper to kind of make some noise and maybe move up into the top tier of the league?
I'd say Illinois this year. It's a really interesting story. I mean, Malcolm Hill is one of the best all-around players in the conference, mainly because he can play every position, and he has actually done so in the past year. But they get Tracy Abrams back. They get LaRon Black back. They also get Mike Thorn Jr. back. So they have 2 6-year guys, which is a really unique thing. I mean, they've got two grandpas on this team. There are 17-year-olds that come into school. So they have one 17-year-old on that team, and they have a 25-year-old, which you just don't see a lot of in college basketball. So they're going to have experience. They're going to be very hungry. I mean, this is a team that was just beaten down with injuries. They've got everybody back, and the guys that played last year got great experience. So now all of a sudden, that competition that I talked about, they have a great competition in practice, and that's experienced old guys playing experienced young guys who are fighting for playing time, which that's what keeps the level of play high. So I think Illinois is going to be very good. I also think Maryland is going to surprise a lot of people because Mark Turgeon actually really likes his team. Last year, everyone was disappointed, and people are saying Mello Tremble didn't have a good year. Mello Tremble had a great year. It's just not that easy in Big Ten basketball when you're one of the best point guards in the country. Ask Yogi. It's just not that easy. You've got to fight for everything, and the chemistry on that team was not good last year. This year, much different. It is Mello Tremble's team. They got Deion Wiley back, who's a great playmaking guard. He's going to take a lot of pressure off of Mello. And they've got much better chemistry. That's a huge thing that we almost use the word, we say chemistry and culture a lot, but we don't really understand what it means. And what it means is players will get the best out of each other. Players will make their teammates better. Last year, the Maryland players didn't make each other better. The only guy that made anybody better was Mello Tremble and his playmaking ability. I mean, you look at Diamond Stone going for 39 points. Well, who did he get the passes from? It was Mello Tremble. So Mello was really the only guy, but he's not a vocal guy. So you need a team that gets along well together. They complement each other well. Mark Turgeon feels like he's got that, and he's a very good coach. I think he coaches teams that are less talented better than he coaches teams who are way too talented like they were last year. So I would look at Illinois, Maryland, and then somewhere in there, I'm not sure where Minnesota falls. I think Minnesota is a team that's just going to come out, play hard, look much more like what we thought a Richard Pitino team would look like.
Funny you mentioned Mello Tremble because that was my next question. You know, Nigel Hayes was named preseason Big Ten Player of the Year. I didn't necessarily agree with that just based on
some of the numbers he
put up last year as far as efficiency. I mean, stats are one thing, but, you know, efficiency, shooting percentages are really important in college basketball right now, and I just didn't think Nigel Hayes was deserving. I would put Mello Tremble maybe as the favorite to win Big Ten Player of the Year. Would you agree with that? And who else, I guess, could you see contending for that award?
No, that's a tough one. It really is. I ultimately think it comes down to who really is at the top. I don't think you can win that award and not be within the top two teams of the league. I think last year, yeah, Denzel Valentine, it's a no-brainer. I mean, he's one of the best players in the country, so you couldn't take that away from him. I see Mello if they finish within the top three or four. I got to get back to you on the Nigel Hayes thing. I mean, Nigel Hayes, I did not vote for him for preseason player of the year. And when he got up to the stage, when we were doing our interviews, and I was actually on the set at the time, but Dave Refson asked him about the award, and he basically just blew it off in a very arrogant and disrespectful way. And a lot of people talk about how intelligent Nigel Hayes is, but the way he's handling things and the way he performed last year is not really what I thought I'd see from Nigel Hayes. I think talent-wise, he's there. Basketball skill-wise, he's there. He actually has a very similar skill set to Paul Pierce. And Paul's a guy I played with a lot in L.A. I know his game very well. And I look at that and I see the similarities, but the mindset's different. It's a different level of arrogance that is carried on the court. Paul found a way to make his teammates better. I haven't seen that from Nigel. And I think he really hurt them at times last year where he didn't run the offense. He didn't play good defense. And I think his attitude could either really help this team or destroy this team. So I have a tough time seeing Nigel Hayes as a player of the year in the Big Ten. I think Mello Tremble's up there just because I don't think there's a better point guard, especially a point guard that can play off the ball screen in the country. But when you look across the board, there's no real big stars. I think OG might be the highest draft pick to come out of the Big Ten this year, but he's not really that type of star that you look at that's going to score 15, 20 points a game and just totally take over games. He's the type of guy who's going to be so consistent night in, night out. He's going to be a defensive stopper, which defensive stoppers don't get enough credit. He may be the best player in the league. up there with a Malcolm Hill in terms of an all-around player, but it comes down to the guys who are really going to have the ball in their hands, and that would be a Melo Trimble.
A couple final questions for you, John. I want to go back. You mentioned chemistry with that Maryland team, and we know that on last year's Indiana team, the chemistry, the camaraderie was such an important part of what made that team go. What kind of sense did you get being around the team of the kind of chemistry and togetherness that this group has?
Well, I'll tell you what. It starts at the top, and it trickles all the way down to the bottom. In the broadcast, I'd mentioned the managers and the grad assistants, and Coach pointed out how important they are to this program in terms of their energy and them keeping their energy up and flying from drill to drill. And you see that that starts with Tom Crean, and it trickles all the way down through his coaching staff, through his players, all the way down to managers and support staff. So this team, they're all dialed in. They all have a job to do. They all respect one another. They don't talk down to one another because their coaches won't talk down to them. There's a unique environment there that people don't realize how positive it is. Because they think they see a coach yell or they see him pace the sideline, they think it's an intense negative thing. It's a very positive culture there. So I think the chemistry is built because they work together well. They train all summer. They train in the off season. I think guys like Colin Hartman, who's not going to play, he's such a positive guy to have around now, especially with his injury. He's not letting up. He's not going to let anybody walk away and be unhappy. I mean, it's really a good group of guys that keep each other up, and Yogi made them all better. But I think they all value the fact that their skill sets are such that they can make their teammates better. And if they can make their teammates better, they're going to play more. And it's a really unique thing for a coach to be able to coach like that, because most coaches have to coach with fear. They have to coach with whoever is going to give them the best chance to win. Well, Tom Crean looks at it a little differently. He looks at his five and goes, who can make each other the best? Who can work together the best? So when you make that the emphasis, everybody on the court is not just fighting to make plays. They're fighting to make each other better. They're fighting to create a good cohesive group. And I think that's a really, really unique thing that it probably goes undervalued. And it's the reason why the chemistry is so good. It's easy to look at Yogi Ferrell. Of course, he was a great leader. But he really wasn't the most vocal guy, and that's not taking anything away from him. He wasn't going to grab anybody by the throat and get everybody together. You know, it was a good, positive environment that keeps this team together. So I think it's, like I said, it's a very unique balance, and these guys want to serve each other well, and I think that's what makes them so good.
You know, leadership has been one of the biggest questions heading into the season with kind of the void. Yogi's gone, you know, Max Bielfeldt, Nick Zeisloff, these guys being gone, Troy Williams as well. Who do you think kind of takes over that leadership role? Do you think it's going to be kind of leadership by group, or do you see one or two guys stepping up and emerging as the leaders for this program as the season goes on?
Well, it's interesting. When you look at leadership, leadership's obviously key. And having guys on the floor that you trust, and I don't mean just the coaches, but the other players trust, is ultimately what leadership is. Leadership for this team is going to come in a variety of forms. There's going to be your bench leadership. And I actually had a good conversation with strength and conditioning coach who everyone knows about in this conference. I mean, he's all over the place. He's the most emotional person there. And I talked to him and I told him, I said, look, there's no other coach in the country that would let you be you. And he said, you know what though? We really got a great relationship, all the players, all the coaches, and everybody understands their strengths. Mine is just getting guys emotional. He goes, and sometimes I got to calm Thomas Bryant down, but other times I got to get guys fired up. So right there, you have his level of leadership, a strength and conditioning coach who most strength and conditioning coaches do not have that much to do with the basketball program during game days or practices. Then you trickle that down to Colin Hartman, who's sitting on the sideline. He's the guy who's going to calm you down. He's the guy who's going to inform you when you need to be informed, or get you checked when you need to be checked, because he's got the perspective to do so. Then you have guys on the floor who are going to quietly make plays for others, like a James Blackman, you know, like a Rob Johnson. You have guys that are going to make plays for others. And I think that's the type of leadership that this team needs. It's kind of leadership by committee, not in any one specific way, but in a variety of ways.
Excellent. Well, John, thank you so much for your input. We always love having you on the show, and we look forward to your great work on the Big Ten Network this season.
My pleasure, guys. We'll talk to you anytime.
Yep. Thanks, John.
Thank you, John.
All right, we'll talk to you. Take care.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for tuning into this episode of Podcast on the Brink. Always appreciate you being here. Another reminder, the promo code is Brink, B-R-I-N-K, at SeatGeek. So use that so that you get $20 off your first purchase. And again, make sure that you are subscribed to the Assembly Call on iTunes or join us at assemblycall.com/live after every IU game. And go to forum.insidethehall.com if you aren't yet part of the Inside the Hall discussion forum. Alrighty. So I teased at the beginning of the show that this episode is dedicated to the 146 rebounds that this IU legend corralled during his sophomore season. And that player is the great, albeit controversial, Jay Edwards. As I said, one of the most talented players in Indiana history. And, you know, Jay, as I also mentioned, was really the guy who bridged the gap between the incredible Steve Alford era, which culminated in the 1987 NCAA title, and then the Calbert Chaney era. And of course, Calbert and the guys came in the 1989-90 season, the season after Jay Edwards left, and would go on to make it to a Final Four, win a few Big Ten championships, you know, and really the last truly great era of Indiana basketball. And sandwiched right between those eras was Jay Edwards. And obviously, he and Lyndon Jones came together after winning three straight state championships at Marion. And Jay certainly lived up to the hype. There's no question. As a freshman, he set the record for three-point percentage for a freshman, shooting 53.6% from downtown. Imagine that for a freshman. And that's a decent amount of attempts, too. I believe that record still stands. And, you know, he was named Big Ten Freshman of the Year, set that record. He would break Steve Alford's conference record of 7 threes in a game. And then as a sophomore, Jay led Indiana to a Big Ten title, that 1989 Big Ten title, which was really impressive given the other great teams in the conference at that time, specifically the Flying Illini. I think they went on to the Final Four that year, and obviously they beat Indiana in that legendary game that the, what was I, 8 years old at the time, 8 years old, 8 year old Jared still remembers that game where Nick Anderson made that three-pointer. But what most people forget about that is what even made that shot possible, which was Indiana was down two. I think it was 67-65. And Jay Edwards makes that fading three-pointer along the left baseline where he's literally, I mean, fading out of bounds, shoots it up over the backboard, makes it. That tied the game. And then, of course, the Nick Anderson shot happened. We won't talk any more about that. But, you know, that was one of many clutch shots that Jay Edwards made. He hit last-second shots to knock off Purdue and Michigan. The Michigan one, of course, features Bob Knight just going bonkers afterwards, jumping up and down. His sweater is flailing all over the place. And, you know, those shots are a big part of the reason why Jay is such a legendary figure at Indiana. And he would go on to average 20 points per game that season, of course, also corralling 146 rebounds to average 4.3 per game. He was named an All-American, and he would, of course, then give up his final 2 years of eligibility to enter the draft, was a second-round pick of the Clippers. His NBA career never amounted to much, and he has said since then that he regrets leaving. And can you imagine Jay playing with that incredible recruiting class, Jay Edwards as a junior playing with Calbert and Greg Graham and all of those guys? One of my favorite and I guess sometimes most frustrating parts about IU basketball is seeing, you know, the overlap of legends and then where there could have been overlap. You know, you think about Mike Woodson kind of bridging the gap between the 76 Hoosiers and the 81 championship team. And you think about Jay and what could have been if he had stayed a couple years. But, you know, Jay had two legendary years. He's in the conversation of if your life depended on a former Hoosier making one shot, who would you pick? You know, you think about a guy like Steve Alford. I don't know, man. I'd have a hard time going against Jay, I have to tell you. After seeing, and you know, I was at some of those games, after seeing him make those last second shots and lead Indiana to that Big Ten title, that guy has ice water in his veins. And for some of the faults that he may have had and some of the unrealized potential that may always kind of frustrate IU fans when they think back to the career of Jay Edwards, he had two legendary seasons as a Hoosier, you know, averaging 18.2 points per game, an All-American, led Indiana to a Big Ten title. So any way you slice it, Jay Edwards is a legend in the history of IU basketball. We dedicate this episode to him. We tip our caps to him, to you, Mr. Jay Edwards. You Are Who, episode number 146 of Podcast on the Brink, is dedicated to. All righty, well, thank you again for being here. We will be back next week with another brand new episode, and holy moly, the season's going to be starting after that. We'll talk about our impressions of Hoosier Hysteria next week, maybe something else depending on the guests that we have, and then it's time to start talking about games. Get excited. All right, Have a great week, everybody. Enjoy Hoosier Hysteria, and we will talk to you soon on the next episode of Podcast on the Brink.